Welcome to the show, ESPN 102.5, The Game. We are down to four teams in the NFL, and the Titans ain't one of them. Luke Rogers in studio at the Luke Rogers on Twitter. Braden Gall, Julian Council, producing intern Calvin, hanging out as well. I do love the NFL divisional round weekend. I think you could argue it's the best weekend in football. We certainly got a finale of the weekend that was spectacular last night. Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, pretty good. The Jags beat the Steelers. The Vikings pull off some, I don't know if it's the Minneapolis miracle or the Millie miracle. I'm not sure which one it's going to be, but obviously a spectacular ending to that game. Of course, the Eagles outlast the Falcons in very ugly fashion to start the weekend. And of course, the only real blowout, one-sided affair of the entire weekend, the New England Patriots flat out outclassed the Tennessee Titans 35-14, even worse than maybe some of us anticipated, certainly worse than Vegas anticipated. They covered the spread relatively easily, and the New England Patriots move on to their seventh consecutive AFC Championship game and 13th overall, I believe, under the Belichick-Brady era. The Luke Rogers, welcome to the show. Any of that surprise you when the final whistle blows and the Titans are walking off the field fairly dejected? Any of that surprise you whatsoever?
As far as the Titans losing?
Yes.
No. I mean, I think, listen, it's a strange thing, this NFL game that we love and follow. You know, they had the unbelievable comeback from down 18 against the Kansas City Chiefs, and everybody was jumping on the Titans bandwagon. Maybe this was a team of destiny. You know, Marcus Mariota had two. Not necessarily team of death, but so far it was. I know that look. I mean, obviously you're playing against the Patriots, but you know, I think it's like Denny Green famously said back in the day. You know, they are who we thought they were, and that's Titans are who we really thought they were. They got exactly what they deserved on the field on Saturday, and I don't think we really couldn't expect an outcome any different. And I know people are going to look at a certain call and look at, you know, Jack Conklin going down, tearing his ACL and losing your right tackle and a fourth down. And listen, though, I mean, you played against the class of the class in the NFL in the Patriots and Tom Brady, and you just didn't have enough horses. I just don't think the Titans had enough, and perhaps they even overachieved really in the playoffs by beating the Chiefs the week before. So, am I surprised? No. And I know people had high hopes, but we also had a lot of pessimists here. We always have pessimists.
I don't think there was a lot of high hopes. I think there was people that, as every good fan should do, give yourself an internal chance. You know what? I'm going to watch this game, and if something crazy happens, we'll have one of the greatest stories that will ever be told in Titans history. And I think you go into that game sort of feeling like that's why house money was uttered on these airwaves like 1,000 times last week, is that I don't think hopes were very high. I mean, certainly not for us here on this show. I think I had 31-21 was the final score that I predicted, so it was actually worse than I thought. The final score is actually not as bad as it really was. It was
right.
You know, they scored late on a long drive that actually gave them like a third of their total yardage on one drive at the end of the game in garbage time. They had 267 total yards of offense. 80 of that came on the final drive where they score a touchdown where it didn't mean anything to anybody. They only had 99 yards in the second half. Again, 80 of that coming on the final drive. So they had 20 yards of offense, basically, in the second half. They gave up 8 sacks.
Yeah.
The New England Patriots had 31 first downs. I mean, this wasn't even close. And so to that effect, maybe it was worse than people thought. Maybe the fans thought they could keep it close, and it's disappointing that they did not. But this, to me, was just straight up different. Like, do you want to know and see what real championship-level football looks like in the NFL? And you got a big dose of it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's all that this is. I don't think this is anything to hang your head about. I don't think this is anything to be, you know, hey, we failed here, 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 and here. That's just the class of the league that you play in, that you played against. They're just that good. That's why they have 5 Lombardi trophies in their trophy case right now, and they're the defending champions and are the one seed and hosting again for the, seven consecutive AFC Championship games and 13 now in the last 20 years. Think about that. I mean, that's insane.
It
so
is. Yeah.
To me, that was just an education for Titans and the Titans fans and the players of, all right, if you want to know what it looks like, that's what it looks like to be at that class and that level in the NFL, and you're just not there yet.
Yeah, and I know we're going to get to this later in the show, but after that performance, we're looking at now yet an extension for head coach Mike Mularkey, and he has said that.
We'll get to it.
He said a few things, but here's the deal. This is what I take away from that game, and it has to do with coaching as well. Is that there's nobody spectacular on the Patriots defense. I'm just gonna say that out there. There's nobody spectacular on the Patriots. Maybe Devin McCourty might be a guy you look at.
Well, their best player might not even. Dont'a Hightower wasn't even playing,
right? But the way that they were able to, the way they're coached up. This is every year. You can talk about how the Falcons blew it last year in the Super Bowl, but when they were in that locker room, when they made halftime adjustments, this coaching staff turned things around for the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl last year, and they were very ready for this Tennessee Titans team and what they were doing. They shut down Derrick Henry, and Derrick Henry was the reason that this team was able to run through and pass the Kansas City Chiefs. And when that was taken away, and the defensive coordinator, Matt Patricia, who may be the next head coach in Detroit, and Bill Belichick, turned the film on, they shut that down, and they found ways to get to the quarterback. Like you said, really an unprecedented sort of tilt with eight sacks, a Patriots
playoff record,
right?
Which means they've never done
with guys like James Harrison and who else? Flower.
They literally got James Harrison off the scrap heap like 3 weeks ago.
And now the Steelers lose. I mean, James Harrison looks like a genius, pushing himself out of Pittsburgh and onto the Patriots roster.
I think Trey Flowers is a better player than people think, but to your point, the front seven, fairly no name. I don't think there's a lot of people in Nashville that could have probably named too many front seven players,
right,
for the New England Patriots.
But
going into the game
again, and we'll get to this later in depth, but again, you have an elite level coaching staff that really puts game plans together on offense and defense, and puts those players in the best, the best position to succeed. And yes, you have Tom Brady, and I understand that. And Tom Brady looks as good as he has ever looked at 40 plus years old.
We've got maybe the best tight end ever
to play.
Genetically created,
right? a Gronk.
I mean, his injuries might keep him from being considered the greatest of all time,
right.
But outside of that, he probably, from a physicality standpoint, size, speed, ball skills, everything, you put it all together, you're like, that might be the best tight end ever, born into this world.
Right.
Brandon Cooks is a really nice player. They took a few shots at him deep early, but that actually didn't work. I mean, that's the one thing that they did a pretty good job of covering. It's just and this is the thing about, you said elite level coaching staff, and that is the truth, because they could have three head coaches on that coaching staff right now as we speak. Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels both getting a lot of run as far as, landing jobs when the season is over. And Josh McDaniels just flat out, I'm not saying he didn't have better players with Tom Brady and all those guys, but his game plan was better than Dick LeBeau's. I thought Dick LeBeau did as well as he could have in the first, 20 or 30 minutes or so, but that's about it. And then Josh McDaniels, same thing, totally outcoached. Josh McDaniels totally outcoached Dick LeBeau, and, Matt Patricia totally outcoached Terry Rubisky. So Belichick outcoached Mularkey. I mean, those three guys for the Patriots just had the whole thing figured out, and it didn't necessarily start that way. I think the Titans had the best first quarter they could have possibly asked for.
Right. I mean, and yes, all indications were the Titans came out and played tough, and surprisingly tough in the first quarter. But I mean, there is nobody in this game, perhaps ever in this game, that's better at in-game adjustments than the New England Patriots, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady. And they did what they had to do. And honestly, like we said before, this is an elite level team. This is the cream of the crop. This is the top of the league, and it would be hard to imagine a scenario where the Titans were able to keep pace with a team like that in really any scenario, any sort of simulation we'd want to do. It just doesn't add up.
Yeah, like, it was just an education in class warfare. I mean, it was just one team was the upper elite of the NFL, and the other team is sort of a team that's in the middle class striving to get to that upper class.
With a lot of young guys.
Right, and they're I want to say they're the fifth or sixth youngest team in the NFL, the Titans. So to me, that was an education process. And we thought Thursday and Friday, it sounds so awful to go into an AFC divisional round game saying things like, this will just be an experience opportunity. Like, you feel awful about that. But then you get on the field with the Patriots and you go, oh, that's right. It's New England. This is what they do to everybody in this round of the playoffs. And this was purely an educational opportunity. And I think, moral victories aren't a thing. I don't like using the term moral victory, frankly, but was it a learning opportunity? You bet. I mean, that was a chance to see what it looks like. That's what it looks like in the NFL at the highest level. And if you don't come away from that as a Titans player or fan going, okay, we still got a lot of work to do. We're on our way. Right. We're in the game. So that's way more important than not being in the game, but we're in the game. And we gave it a run for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they scored 21 points in the second quarter. And all of a sudden they scored 28 unanswered. And all of a sudden you're looking up and you're going, oh, 35 unanswered. And all of a sudden it's 35-7. And you're going, this is why they have all of the trophies.
Yeah.
And there's just nothing else to be said. It's not, this isn't overly complicated. This isn't like, don't miss the forest through the trees here. They are flat out the best organization in football, and you are not. And the Titans are working to get to that point, and this was just another step in that process. And sometimes a step in that process is getting your face beat in a little bit.
Yeah.
and that's what happened on Saturday night. I do want to ask you, though, if there was, could you spin this at all as things happened in the second quarter that may have changed the outcome of the game? I'll ask you this. I'll ask you it when we come back, and we'll see where you go with this. I have a feeling I know, but could anything have been different had a couple of different things happened early in that game? We'll get to that when we come back. So we're off and running here on a Monday edition. We got Buck Rising going to join us. We got Joe Rexroad on the show as well, so we'll have a good time. As the NFL is, of course, down to four, championship weekend coming up next weekend should be a lot of fun. Obviously, Titans fans still feeling the sting right now of a 35-14 loss to the New England Patriots on Saturday evening. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall, we'll be right back. Could anything have been different on Saturday night? Had a couple of different things broken the Titans' way. We'll have that discussion when we come back right here. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, and we'll never be royal. It's a running out of blood.
Make your picks for our Pro Football Pick'em Contest. You have a chance to win awesome prizes, including a trip for two to Hawaii, brought to you by Computer and Communications Innovations in Nashville. Sign up and pick now at thegamenashville.com. The Luke Rogers, Braden Gall here on ESPN 102.5. The Game, hearing Mike Mularkey there, of course, talking about the learning experience. And that's clearly, I think, what eventually Titans fans will settle on, as they understand that this was a class warfare situation where you have the greatest franchise in all of professional football going against a team that wants to take three or four more steps to get to that level. My question, though, to you, and I'll play devil's advocate on this just to appease the fans, because even Mike Pereira, the former head of officials and the Fox official analyst there, was sort of trolling Titans Twitter on Saturday, early Sunday. The tweet from him is, reasons for my silence was due to the fact that I left the production room and my computer to go to the bar for a couple of Tito's, which I wouldn't have, because it's clear that the refs cost the Titans the game and they are the better team, at least in the minds of those that are tweeting me. Some sarcasm there, of course, from Mike Pereira to, I'm assuming, what amounts to Titans fans tweeting at Mike Pereira saying the refs cost us the game. And I saw the gif of the Derrick Henry face mask everywhere all over the internet, and oh my God, I saw the Patriots jersey tweet where it's like, which one of the Patriots jersey is your favorite? And it's like the three Patriots jerseys and then the stripes of the officials. Like, is that your favorite Patriots jersey? Listen, did Michael Jordan get some calls because he was the greatest player on the planet? Yes, of course he got some calls. Do I think the referees are in it to give it to the Patriots? No, I don't think the referees cost anybody anything. So that was going to be my question here, is should Titans fans, because Jack Conklin, torn ACL, he's going to have surgery in the next couple of days. There's a chance he has to go on the PUP list. There's a chance he's not ready to go for 2018 and could miss some time because of the timing of the injury.
Yeah.
We've also seen people come back in 8 to 9 months, which puts you right around that October mark, you know, September, October, if you're on the right side of it and you're lucky. So that's a big blow to this team. They lost their starting right tackle in the first quarter. And then on the 4th-and-1, you don't get the penalty call on Derrick Henry. So the question is, you're up 7-0. The first quarter went as well as it could have possibly gone from a game plan standpoint. You bled the clock. You had a long touchdown drive. You were running the football with Derrick Henry, even though you weren't picking up a lot of yards. You got a couple of stops on defense. The whole first quarter goes as well as you could have possibly, like, written it up in a book if you're a Titans fan. And then a couple of bad things happened to you. Had those bad things not happened to you, do you think anything is different about this game, or do you think Titans fans, that's wishful thinking and they're just grasping at straws?
No, I mean, you can't call a game or or change a game on those instances there. I mean, you said it before. This team was completely, you know, in a different class, and not in a good way than the New England Patriots. The Patriots were the better team across the board. And I don't see anything about any circumstance, any play, any number of plays in this game that would cause this game to turn in any other direction except for the Patriots winning. And I know you like to look back and you feel like it's, you know, you've been robbed or there was misses here and there. And that's football, and that happens. And that happens for a lot of teams. And this, it just, frankly, they weren't good enough. And I think Mike Mularkey did echo that sentiment when you know, he said he's never going to blame the officials for costing us a game, and, you know, we got to play better. There's no question about it, which is pretty much coach speak. But it's coach speaks for saying, you know, that was a better team, and it didn't matter what the refs did. We weren't going to win anyway. It was sacked up. So I don't buy that. I think it's a convenient scapegoat for frustrated fans. But I think as we get a little bit of time between the pain of this loss and the next weekend, I think the Titans fans are smart, and the realistic aspect of the Patriots are one of the greatest dynasties we've ever seen in this sport, in this game.
Any sport.
Right, any sport, really. You can't really make any kind of logical argument that the Titans would have won or even been in this game had their calls gone different direction.
Yeah, I agree. I can't make that case. And if you're a Titans fan sitting there going, man, the Jack Conklin injury was a huge injury. There's no question about losing one of your better offensive linemen. And then, of course, obviously, Dennis Kelly steps in, and you still give up 8 sacks. So there's no question it affected the game.
Sure.
But put 3 Jack Conklins out there, you're not winning that game. And that's the unfortunate part of it is – you don't really get to see how it would have played out if those two calls go differently. But at the end of the day, when you both run basically the same amount of plays and neither team turns the ball over and the other team just has twice as many yards as you and 3 times as many points as you, you're just not as good as them. And I don't think there's any way you can spin it or twist it or sell it to somebody as a, oh, this could have happened if that could have happened. There's just no way. So, you know, if you want to argue about the Rams game because of a penalty here or there, if you want to argue about the Niners game because of an interception, that's fine, great, go for it. You got the big call on the fumble non-fumble against Kansas City when Derek Johnson just murdered Marcus Mariota, and it should have been a fumble and it wasn't. You got the call there in the biggest game of the season for you guys, and then, you know, you lost a player to an injury, which is awful, and frankly what we said on Friday was don't lose anybody for next season. The biggest problem that could come out of this game is if you lost one of your big players for next year. And that may be the case with Jack Conklin.
I don't know if he –
that's the biggest story for the Titans.
That is the big story because there's – outside of being really a superhuman recovery, you know, story, kind of like an Adrian Peterson, there really – it's very, very slim chance that Jack Conklin's ready to suit up and play week one.
Yeah.
Which means that he's going to have to knock off some rust. He's going to have to, you know, really get his rehab in top gear. And you're going to be playing a few games for sure. You're going to be playing a few games without your former All-Pro tackle.
Is the pup thing like 6 weeks, right? Like if you're going to come back before 6 weeks, you can come back and you can be on one pup list or like there's another IR where you can come back later in the season. To me, I would expect him to play the last month of the season, let's say,
right,
and maybe you've got him for a playoff run. That's sort of how I think you have to view it, which is another conversation for tomorrow and the rest of this build up to the NFL draft, because we already knew they were going to have to address the offensive line anyway.
Yeah.
This seems like it's going to be even more of a priority for them as well. Joe in Spring Hill, good friend of the show and Patriots fan. Joe, what's up?
Hey. Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I think Titans fans should feel very optimistic. You got Marcus Mariota back there, young, and I'm telling you, he already showed he's a playoff quarterback. So I think once that piece is in place, I mean, how many teams actually have a legitimate starting quarterback? And, you know, they got some playoff experience. That's fine. The officiating, we can't say anything about that. Like you just said, you kind of got my thunder on that. When you get it big in one game, you know, you may not get that big call the next game. But one of the things we talked about on Friday was them going there and not losing the game. And I understand it wasn't that close of a game. But, you know, there's always dumb decisions made. We look back. And the fourth down, when you got no timeouts, I couldn't get past that one. It was like I was kind of watching it in front of me going, there it is. There comes the dumb stuff against, you know, that makes teams, you know, maybe lose the game. Like we say, it's not one play, but I got to say, you know, they did get the experience. Titans fans should be optimistic and just call back to, because I was on record Friday that I told you it'd be a 21-point game, so had to give myself that one. Seven straight AFC title games, ridiculous. Gentlemen, thanks for taking my call. Good for you, Titans fans. Team's growing, a lot of potential there. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you, Joe. We're all about self-promotion on the show.
Yeah.
So Joe wants to call in and talk about how awesome he is.
That's he's a resident.
I got no problem with that.
Pat's expert here.
No, I don't. But the thing is I just don't think it's that. It wasn't very alarming at all. It wasn't shocking. It didn't startle me. I didn't. The game ended, and I wasn't like, oh my God, what did I just see? It was all just so matter of fact for them, and I think that's where, just like the media all week building up to it, all the Boston people we had on were just like. I was like, are you guys bored with this yet? Like, going to the divisional round? And they're all like, kind of. Like, this is status quo for this organization.
Yeah.
And that's, again, you got a long, you said greatest, maybe the greatest franchise or dynasty or run or whatever you want to call it. It might be the most difficult sport to do that in, football.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. No one from Boston that came on our show last week said that they were bored about it. They said this is when their season starts. This is when they start to get excited. Like, the regular season, what they're bored about, because this is when their season starts, because they're used to going, like Joe just said, their seven straight AFC title game. You just got to clear that up, because no one ever said that. You're putting words
in
people's
mouth. Well, no, I asked Don Shaughnessy.
You asked him because you thought that they'd be bored, but they never said
joke,
they were.
Julian, I said to Dan Shaughnessy, it sounds like you're kind of bored with this. And he's like, yeah, this is just what we do. Like, this is when the things get started. And they roll through these teams like they're nothing in the AFC divisional round. And that's what happened again. And until somebody really gives them a challenge, which has been a long time, seven consecutive times they've been here. So the Dan Shaughnessy was so matter of fact about it last week. Again, a little tongue in cheek with the board thing. But, I mean, you read the columns before and after the game. I mean, there's just nothing he had to say that was either new to him. And again, I'm not talking about just, I'm sort of using Dan as a representative of
Pat's Nation.
Of Pat's Nation. And that it's like, don't get me wrong, the crowd was great and the fans are fired up and the team's right where it needs to be. But there is this element of, all right, on to an AFC Championship game. This is when the season really, like to Julian's point, this is when the season gets started. And they went out there, handled their business just like, it was very ho-hum. The whole thing was very, I'm going to throw it to Deion Lewis. We're going to throw it to James White. Gronk's going to catch a few passes. We'll throw it to Julian. I'll target Brandon Cooks a few times down the field. We're going to blitz with a bunch of dudes you never heard of and get 8 sacks for a playoff record. Like, it just wasn't
the second bye week, right?
Yeah, it just wasn't a big deal.
Did Julian Edelman play on Saturday night?
Caught like a ton of passes.
Amendola.
Sorry, I get those two guys confused. Danny Amendola caught like 10 passes or something crazy like that.
That was some Julian on Julian crime,
yes,
right there.
Yes. No, he's standing up for Julian.
Right.
That's what he was doing. So yeah, it just was another Patriots. Hey, go out and take care of business and see you next week. And that's where they are now. They got to play a Jacksonville team that's got a great defense, but you know they're going to stack the box and force Blake Bortles to beat them. So should be very interesting.
And Blake Bortles was good.
He was against the Steelers. Very good.
I mean, as much as he gets,
especially in play action,
gets trolled and gets dumped on in the media by other players, Darrell Casey, you name it. Bortles has played well enough and played good enough. More, you know, as a game manager and sort of that's what they want him to do with Leonard Fournette. He's played well enough for his team to win with that defense.
Our very own Buck Rising going to join us when we come back, covering all things Tennessee Titans here for ESPN 102.5 The Game. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall. We'll be right back. The Luke Rogers hanging out here, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah.
Buck Rising.
The
in
Buck
studio.
Rising, y'all.
But not on Twitter. It's just the Luke Rogers on Twitter at just Buck Rising, R-E-I-S-I-N-G, of course.
There's
an E in there. Also, of course, you can hear him on the Technically Foul podcast with Julian Council, our producer. And that's, of course, on iTunes everywhere. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Buck, is there anything that surprised you at all about the way the game played out, the final score, the statistical analysis? I mean, anything at all stand out to you as like, oh, that was new. I didn't expect that to happen.
No, I think for the most part, it went pretty well how we all expected it to, right? I mean, if you're not going to be able to do the most important thing in the sport, and that is get pressure with four players, you're not going to be able to do anything to beat Brady. Brady had all the time in the world to be able to complete passes. They neutralized the run game of the Tennessee Titans effectively. You could have scripted that, and it would have looked the exact same way.
Yeah, you say the most important things in football, and my mind immediately goes, pressure the quarterback, protect your quarterback, and run the football.
Mm-hmm.
And
none of which the Tennessee Titans.
The Titans didn't do any of those three things. Like, not even close. Like epically bad at protecting the quarterback. Now, I know Jack Conklin, a big part of that, but I'm sorry. One player doesn't make 8 sacks happen.
No. But, I mean, it turns out that Dennis Kelly is, in fact, only a blocking tight end, and that he is a total liability when you ask him to play actual offensive line. No, I mean, Bill Belichick knew exactly what they wanted to do. It's not like the Tennessee Titans are shy about telling you what exactly they want to do and what they're good at and how important the mobility of the quarterback is to the offense. And when you can't, when he is even slightly less than 100%, you see how much that takes away from what they're able to do. And of course, he had that strained quad in the first quarter, and he played through it very well, able to finish the game. But you know, he was a non-factor really. In terms of what he was able to give them on the ground. He had a few rushes for first downs, but other than that, you know, there wasn't anything that the Patriots were unprepared for. There were no distractions in Foxborough, despite all the reports.
So, Buck, is there any silver lining in this game? Obviously, getting to the second round of the NFL playoffs in and of itself is an accomplishment for a team that
for sure
won 3 games just a couple of years ago. What do you take away from this game that as positives?
As positives, I mean, the fact that you are in this game to begin with is a massive positive. I mean, that cannot be overstated enough, especially when you consider the depths that this team was at 2 years ago when they were literally the worst team in the sport. So the fact that you are here in only 2 years' time with a bunch of young talent who are capable of competing and are the moment was not too big for them. It appeared in terms of the players on the field. Yes, they were outcoached, they were outplayed, but you really didn't feel like players like Jayon Brown or Adoree Jackson or Corey Davis were really overwhelmed at any point, other than they were just playing a vastly better team and a vastly better coached team. And besides the fact that the 40-year-old quarterback was outstanding, as he always is, and he will continue to be until his arm literally falls off. You can certainly be hopeful for the future, although Mike Mularkey's comments about what they're going to do with the coaching staff is probably the biggest concern of all.
Well, we're going to have to get to that coming up in just a few minutes, but I think the offense, it still felt like they had the right game plan in the first quarter, even if it meant 3.5 yards in a cloud of dust. Let's be patient. Let's run the football. It got them the lead. Let's bleed the clock. Let's get a few stops
and
hope that that can continue. And then what happens is you look up and all of a sudden they've gone on like 2 quick drives and it's 21-7 and you're going, how the heck did that happen? And at that point you've lost your starting right tackle. And you mentioned some of the positives though, because I agree with you. You know, you put Adoree Jackson on Brandon Cooks and you go have fun, and it looked like he was fine with that.
He was fine.
Corey Davis.
Just as he's been all season long.
Corey Davis probably had the best game of his entire career, making a couple of big plays in man-to-man, one-on-one situations. Hey, go make plays against the best team in the world, and he did. So
right.
I think the concern, I think all of this is positive when you go big picture, step back, and the initial sting of the loss wears off if you're a Titans fan. You go, okay, learning experience, all that stuff. But the one thing we didn't want was a big injury. How big of a factor do we believe that Jack Conklin's injury for this team moving forward? Forget the game. How big of an injury is this? Do you believe for this team moving forward?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, it's massive because he is now going to have his entire offseason and probably into, you know, once things start to pick up for next year's regular season, he's going to be having to rehab and to deal with this. And that is, you know, it sounds like, you know, this is your only job and how hard can it be? But this is a really arduous thing that he's getting ready to face. Marcus Mariota talked about it post-game in his press conference, that his offseason, in terms of working his way back from the injuries, was really tough. And that really wears on you. And for you to have to go through something like that before the season even begins and then have to go through a full season, especially with the position that he plays, I mean, you know, people come back from ACL injuries all the time. And it's because of the science today and the medical care is so good for these guys. But
235 pounders coming back from it feels different than like 350 15-pounder.
Right. It
just feels different to me.
I'm really concerned about how it will affect his mobility. I'm really concerned with how it would affect, you know, even just the psyche of a young player like that. I mean, this is tough stuff. And so I think that is a huge concern moving forward, especially because of how good he's been. And clearly, I mean, I don't know if he makes 8 sacks difference, but there was a difference to be made with Jack Conklin in the game, obviously.
So I guess the news in the aftermath of this loss to New England was that the Titans extended head coach Mike Mularkey after he was on the proverbial hot seat for the end of the season and even into the first round against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on that? And his follow-up statement was that there will be no staff changes as well. So as of now, if we're to believe what Mike Mularkey says and that John Robinson is going to go with that, Mike Mularkey is the head coach moving forward, and there are zero changes to the staff that really struggled on the offensive side of the ball this season.
Oh, no doubt. And that's hugely concerning for you to, you know, have such a disconnect with everything that's being talked about and being picked apart in terms of what you've done offensively, and for the main reason that his job was so uncertain or his job status was so uncertain is because they think, because people are starting to say that it's hindering the development of the quarterback. That's the franchise's most important asset. So, I mean, when your coaching staff starts to become a liability, and I understand, you know, Mike was saying that Terry did a good job and that calling plays is hard, well, you need to get somebody who's up to that task, okay? Because it cannot look like this if you're going to compete, especially when everybody knows how much talent this team has and how much better they can be, and when they show flashes on offense, and it's got absolutely nothing to do with the guy who's calling the plays. Mike to say that, if he can say that, is it lip service?
How much credence?
That's what I want to know. Do you believe it?
I think he's self-aware enough to know that something's going to have to be done, and I think he's self-aware enough to know that even if he doesn't want to do it because he's too close and he and Terry Robiskie are good friends, that John Robinson or Amy Adams Strunk, the controlling owner, somebody has to step in and say, listen, we're bringing you back, but something has to be different because you cannot continue to run an offense like this. You just can't.
I tend to agree. Luke tends to agree. Most Titans fans tend to agree. We will hear from Mike Mularkey when we come back, and we'll get into exactly what it is the Titans coaching staff needs to accomplish this offseason. Should they be sticking with what they've got? Buck Rising, always a pleasure, my friend. Good to talk to you, and enjoy the offseason.
Yeah, thanks for letting me do this, guys. It's been fun this year.
Absolutely. Buck Rising there, of course, at Buck Rising on Twitter. There's an E in there. And follow him, of course, and listen to his podcast with Julian Council, Technically Foul, on iTunes, and rate it, review it, subscribe, all that good stuff. When we come back, you'll hear Mike Mularkey's comments about his coaching staff, about his offense, and about his future with the Tennessee Titans, and you'll get our thoughts on that. Luke Rogers, Braden Gall, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. That was Titans head coach Mike Mularkey yesterday at his press conference. You're listening to 102.5 live from the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. And that is the line, that is the comment, that is the statement that has all Titans Nation sitting up in their chair and wondering what the future of their franchise is going to look like. And it's really hard. Luke Rogers here hanging out with Braden Gall. And before we get to your thoughts, Luke, on this entire situation and those comments from Mike Mularkey, I pulled up basically the 10 most important offensive stats that I could find in football. You could go yards per game, you could go passing yards per game, rushing yards per game, points per game, yards per play, total plays run, turnovers, third down conversions, penalties, sacks allowed. That's 10 stats right there. Maybe you could throw red zone in there. I didn't do that one. But basically, those are 10 of the most important stats that you can come up with to measure an offense. And there's only one between 2016 and 2017 that actually got better. Every single offensive metric that you can use to measure the efficiency of an offensive football team got significantly worse. 358 yards per game in 2016, 314 yards in 2017. They averaged 199 passing yards per game. In a world where we have 5,000-yard passers all the time, they didn't even average 200 yards passing per game. They went from third in the NFL in rushing to 15th. They went they're 20th in the nation or in the league in scoring. They averaged half a yard less per play. They went from 11th to 18th. The only thing that they were third in the NFL in third down conversions last year. They were 25th, one of the worst in the league this year. They turned the ball over more this year. The only thing that got better in the entire offense from year one to year two under Terry Robiskie and that offensive coaching staff is the penalties. They had 85 penalties this year, second in the NFL. Very good, very disciplined team when it came to not when it comes to not taking penalties. But otherwise, there is basically not a single metric with which you can use to evaluate this offense. And offensive coaching staff members, including, of course, the primary offensive coach, Terry Robiskie, and look at this offense and say anything got better and improved. And if anything, you added talent in the NFL draft. Your first three picks were playmakers. Your quarterback is supposed to be a year bigger, a year older in year three. He's supposed to be better. There literally is not a single thing you can look at about this offensive team and say it was better this year. So in my opinion, Mike Mularkey, totally deserving of a contract extension, totally deserving of being given another year, totally deserving of being of acknowledging what it is he accomplished, which is they went from 5 wins during 2 seasons to 18 wins and a playoff bid and a playoff win and a trip to the AFC divisional round to face the New England Patriots. All of that is deserving of Mike Mularkey getting credit and getting an extension. And I am okay with that. I am not okay with Mike Mularkey blindly saying the first day of the offseason that Terry Robiskie did a great job and there are going to be no changes. That part I have a major problem with because I don't think it means he's actually looking at the actual reality of the situation.
Agreed. I mean, listen, anybody who spent any time watching this offense this year has to come away with the same conclusion, is that the Titans might be the most frustrating example of an offense that's kind of stuck in the past or even square peg round hole with Marcus Mariota. They've got a former Heisman winner who regressed this year.
Two of them.
13 touchdowns, 15 picks, 79.3 passer rating. I mean, not the step forward a lot of us hoped and thought Mariota would have. And I think an example was made of how bad this offense was against the Patriots. They were out-coached, out-schemed on every level. And listen, I think all you have to do is look in division to see what Bill O'Brien was able to do with Deshaun Watson. And I think that those two players, Watson and Mariota, are very similar in their skill sets and attributes. And what Bill O'Brien did was really implement a college-style offense and did about as much as he possibly could to schematically stress other defenses with designed runs, with read option plays, play action, deep strikes, something that made a lot of sense for the style of football that made Deshaun Watson the best quarterback he could be. And I just don't see that same sort of, you know, impetus or flexibility or foresight or vision in Terry Robiskie and in this offense that Mike Mularkey has put together. And it's a very stark contrast between what Mariota is able to do and what Watson did in the short time we saw him as a rookie this season. The Titans played 2 and 3 tight end sets, you know, and ran a league-low 39% of their plays in the NFL's now standard 3-4-3 receiver formation. So most of the time, they put their very athletic and sort of spread offense quarterback, who came from spread offense in college, you know, in heavy sets that really don't accentuate his skill set. Don't let him be the best Marcus Mariota that he can be. And yes, he did have some bad throws, and yes, was coming off an injury, and yes, he sailed a bunch of balls. All that to say, there are a lot of things that could have been done schematically to put Marcus Mariota in the best position that he can be to be successful, and I don't believe this offensive design is that situation.
And I want to be pretty clear here. It's hard to look at one game and make all of these conclusions. You know, the offensive line played awful football against New England. They could not protect the quarterback. They could not run the football. Marcus didn't play particularly well until garbage time. He had one good drive at the beginning there. Corey Davis is the only player you can really look at and said, man, that guy played a better game than he normally does.
Oh, he was awesome. He played the best game he's played of his career.
It's important that we're not making all of these judgments in this vacuum of the New England Patriots game.
No, it's not. This is the whole season.
This is the whole season. That's why I went back and looked at every major offensive statistic you could possibly look at to measure an offense. And the only one that got better between 2016 and 2017 was they took fewer penalties. They turned the ball over more. They averaged fewer yards per play. They had less rushing yards, less passing yards, less total yards, less points, worse on third downs. You know, everything was worse. Everything was worse. This was not a and the problem I have with that is that this was supposed to be a step year where your first three draft picks were offensive weapons to give to your quarterback. Your offensive line was Taylor Lewan and Jack Conklin are supposed to be a year older and stepping into their prime.
Right.
And guess what? Jack Conklin has started 32 of 32 games so far, and that's in danger now with the injury. Your quarterback is going into his third year where he's supposed to take a step. Now,
the biggest step in the third year.
Again, I understand that the injury in the offseason, the injury during the season, DeMarco Murray not being healthy. If you want to point to those things and say these are some reasons why the offense maybe shouldn't have taken as big a step forward, that's fine. But I still expect at least a small step forward, if not maintaining status quo. And not only did they not maintain status quo this year on offense, they took a step back, as I've said, for like the fourth time this segment, basically in every major category. In every way, shape, or form that you can measure an offense, they got worse in every way. And I don't know, to me, I agree that Mike Mularkey should be given a contract extension. I've been saying that since even the three-game losing streak. I don't think that Mike Mularkey has done anything to be removed from power. I'm not saying he's the guy who's going to take this team to championship levels, but I think he's done a good job with this franchise, and I think you can't argue with the 5 wins to 18 wins, just that simple sort of clean metric there. It's hard for me to argue with that. But the next step is, all right, you're clearly not on the same level as Jacksonville, much less New England.
Right.
Jacksonville's playing for a trip to the Super Bowl this weekend. We're going to hear from the Jaguars players a little bit later on in the show. They'll be happy to tell you, Titans, that you're not playing this weekend.
Yeah.
But there needs to be another step now. And there's nothing about this particular offensive coaching staff that tells me and gives me any faith that that's going to happen. Mike Mularkey has to show me that he's willing to evolve. And if he doesn't do that, that is when you start to lose my faith in the head coach.
Yeah, agreed. And I'm ready to just get rid of this exotic smash mouth thing. Because, listen, there was nothing exotic about this offense. Nothing. It's the most old-fashioned offense that's run in the entire NFL. And you're running that type of offense with a new generation quarterback in Marcus Mariota, who is a dual threat. It makes zero sense. It really does. It makes zero sense to run so many heavy sets, not spread the field, and try to make Marcus Mariota into – you know, it's weird. It's an old-timey quarterback. You like Sammy Baugh or something. I'm trying to think of who you can put out there that makes sense. It seems like football from a foregone era. It's a past. It's just old. It's bad. And like I said before, look at what Houston did with Watson. Look at the difference in that offense with Deshaun Watson and Tom Savage. And what they did with that is Bill O'Brien, who people, you know, recognize his abilities as a play caller and offensive coach. Look at how different that offense looked with a guy that has foot speed and mobility like Deshaun Watson has. And they threw the ball all over the yard as well. And yes, they have Nuke.
They have better receivers.
They do. Yes.
They've got two studs.
But top to bottom, I mean, if you take Nuke off that offense, and we're not doing that, but say you did, Titans have a comparable receiving core to Will Fuller and Braxton Miller and those guys. I'd say we're pretty comparable.
I would take DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry over Lamar Miller and Dante
right,
Ford.
Right, right. And I take the offensive line they have. So that being said, it's time to make a change. And I can't help but wonder if Mularkey came out and said what he said because Terry Trubisky is his friend, and it kind of takes him off the hook and puts the blame on John Robinson or Amy.
Adam Strunk.
Adam Strunk as sort of the bad guy. He's not the bad guy now firing his friend.
And maybe that's a smart, savvy sort of way to play it in the media. Nothing about Mike Mularkey. There are many things that I love about Mike Mularkey. Being a sneaky, savvy media person is not exactly the
media ninja.
Yeah, media ninja is not the tag I would normally put on Mike Mularkey. He's generally a pretty honest guy, which, again, I like about him. We'll hear from Taylor Lewan when we come back. I also want to hear from you Titans fans. Are you excited and happy with what your head coach said yesterday? Or does that make you concerned and nervous? ESPN 1025 The Game, 737-1025, 615-737-1025. I'd like to know what you thought when you heard your head coach say that yesterday. We'll hear from Taylor Lewan when we come back. Luke Rogers, Braden Gault, ESPN 1025 The Game.